tonight we have a subject which most of our Western world doesn't know too much about, and it has the name karmic law. In our Bible we meet it as sowing and reaping, and there are many other names you can give it: action, reaction, plus and minus, merit and demerit, cause and effect. It has its origin long before Jesus, and actually in the Sanskrit, the meaning of karma is conduct, deed or conduct. And the meaning is that there is a personal responsibility that each of us has for his or her conduct. Now, the Hindus and the Buddhists introduced the idea that for every deed you commit, there is a corresponding reaction, and that there is an invisible chart kept, you might say, of your activities, and your deeds follow you from one incarnation to the next, so that you may have committed some kind of irresponsible deed at one time, and lo and behold, 5 centuries later, you get an abscess in the ear, and you say, "What hit me, and why?" And you cannot, of course, trace it to the original cause, which was 5 centuries ago. This is not an exaggerated statement, because the idea of karma is that as you progress, you are building up at the same time a series of debts or trespasses against the truth. And every debt must be canceled out, or you must be reborn again. And therefore, the cause of rebirth into a human incarnation is that our karma has not been canceled out. We still have debts that we haven't paid. Now, if you have seen the movie The Space Odyssey in the year 2001, or even if you haven't, there is a basic idea, a theme in this movie about a spaceship going off into the year 2001 controlled by a robot. And the robot gets so important that it is practically the brains of the ship, except for the man who converses now and then with the robot and gives it his orders on what to do. And then this spaceman goes out of the ship, and while he's out, the robot decides this is a good time to get rid of mankind in general, and leaves him out there and starts the ship away. And of course, what they're showing us in this science fiction story of the future is that man has created a robot which will be smarter and more powerful than man himself. And the thing that strikes me about it is that this is already true and has been true for some 10,000 years and more. The robot, which is more powerful than man, already exists. And that is the universal mind, which does control man. And it is because of this universal mind which controls man that we build our karmic debt from incarnation to the next. Now, to get an idea then of a power which controls our human activities, even though it's invisible, and forces us, while we are ignorant of it, to commit error after error after error, and then to suffer the penalty of those errors, and never know while we're doing it that we are committing an error. And this is how karmic effects come into being. Now, you're in an automobile and you drive past a red light and the policeman gives you a ticket. And you say, "I didn't see it," and he says, "Sorry." Or you commit another minor crime of some sort, and then your excuse is, "I didn't know there was such a law." And you're told ignorance of the law is no excuse. But on a much vaster scale, by being a human being, you are breaking the law of God. Just by being a human being, karma begins when you depart from divine law. And if we do not know divine law, we must depart from it, because ignorant of it, we certainly cannot fulfill it. And so humanhood, being a departure from divine law, the human is constantly building a string of karmic debts to which he is always reborn again as an infant to begin anew another parade of ignorance of divine law. And so we see that although we may have sincere intentions, a desire to worship God, a dedicated way of life, we may be good to our neighbors. We may be fine, upstanding citizens who desire to support their communities and their countries and the world at large. And in spite of all our good intentions, we're building up the karmic debt. Now, the will of God in you must fulfill itself, or else you are not fulfilling God's will in your life. And therefore we have to take stock of ourselves, come out of the clouds and say, how am I breaking divine law? How am I living outside of the will of God? How am I, through omission or commission, permitting myself to move in an orbit that is not the divine orbit? And so we see that within you is the divine image of your being. And unless you bring this divine image into expression, unless you permit it to express through you, the will of the Father is not expressing, and instead there is a human being out here, separated from his own self, his own divine image, and in that separation, it is impossible for you to move in the rhythm of God. All of the qualities in the divine image remain there, functioning, but never in your human experience. And so every time you fear, you are building your karma for tomorrow. You are sending out what is called bad karma. Every time you worry, every time you doubt, every time you do anything that does not recognize the invisible presence of God, you are sending out bad karma. Every time you condemn, every time you assume that imperfection is reality, Every time you do something of a discordant, dishonest, condemnatory, fearful or hateful nature, you are refusing to acknowledge the presence of God invisible. You are piercing the Christ. Not because you want to or know you're doing it, but because you have not fulfilled the invisible law that God is yourself. God, the invisible self of the universe, must be acknowledged as yourself, and to the degree that you do not acknowledge God as yourself by your deeds, by your conduct, to that degree you are personally responsible, and your karmic bad debt is increasing and must be canceled out at some future date. Your next incarnation or the five ones after that. But that is the law. It is inflexible, it is inexorable, it cannot be changed. Because the will of God must be expressed. Now, when we are concerned with 60 or 80 years of a human span, we are completely oblivious to the fact that these 60 or 80 years are being lived merely to pay out a debt that we created 100 or 2 or 500 years ago. It's an accumulated debt of all of our past human lives, all accumulated to be paid off now and in the future of this time segment. And this is quite a different teaching, of course, than Orthodoxy has given us. And yet this is the nature of tonight's chapter. Now, you can call it cause and effect. You can see that Jesus introduced it when he said, as he sows, so shall he reap. And you're talking about the same thing. So we have to look at ourselves very carefully. I have here an invisible force so working that unless I can understand it, I'm going to be building up karmic debts forever. I didn't realize that when I just sat down to dinner and discussed politics that I was building up a karmic debt, but I was. And when I went out to that little party at such and such a place and we discussed the racial inequalities, when we discussed overpopulation, when we discussed the various levels of poverty throughout the world and lack of food in certain places, we were building karmic debts, because that was not true. We were expressing a human point of view about human appearances. And it isn't too long before we begin to see how, in a spiritual way, we are truly backward, almost obsolete. Because once we begin to realize that karmic law is going to be here forever until it's broken, we will not try too seriously to change our ways. We will continue to be hurt, to suffer for our acts without knowing we have committed these acts. Things that to us were seemingly innocuous. And yet in spite of it, every human attitude which does not acknowledge the invisible Father is a deed for which we must pay. Now then, you can go back behind that and see that the world's idea of punishment is mistaken. Orthodoxy will teach that God punishes and that God rewards. And such statements in the Bible as, "Your Father who seeth in secret will reward thee openly," has been interpreted to mean that there is a God who rewards you. Now, as you know, the order of the sun and the stars and the moon, the various forces of nature, were not given to us as a reward, and they are not withheld from us as a punishment. They simply are here. And there is no God to punish, and there is no God to reward. What has happened is that man is being charged for his karmic debts. It's as if you left your house tonight, and you traveled so many miles. Now there's nothing can change the fact that in order to get back, you must travel the same amount of miles. And if you had gone twice as far to get back, you would have to go twice as far. And the distance that we move away from God is the distance we must move back. And that is not punishment. That is karmic law. Now when Jesus said to the adulteress, "Neither do I condemn thee," he did not punish her. And if you examine his complete ministry, you will discover that nowhere, at no time, did he punish a single individual. And if he were here as the representative of God to fulfill the law of God, if punishment were part of that law, you would have seen much punishment. But forgiveness was part of that law, not punishment. And so we, as we look back at his teaching, can see that much of it was directed to teach us how, first, to be aware that unknowingly we are sending out bad karma by departing from the consciousness of God, and all of that distance that we depart, we must retraverse to come back to it. While we are departing from the consciousness of God, we are building our debts, the bad karma. Then we must learn to send out good karma. And many people would be very anxious to stop at that point. But his teaching went further and said, after you have broken the direction of your bad karma and are now sending out good karma by such deeds as forgiveness, love, integrity, justice, awareness that God is the source of all things, making peace with your enemies. He gave us a long list in the Sermon on the Mount, and the purpose of these was to teach us how to break the bad karma we were sending out so that we could send out good karma. But that was not enough. We then had to go beyond sending out good karma, and we have to rise into the law of grace, in which we discover that the law of karma only applies in the world of matter. And this takes you beyond the Eastern philosophies, where complete families live in the realization of their karma without trying to break it, not knowing it can be broken, thinking that they are bound by laws of heredity, laws of karma, and they have them interwoven. There are mothers who check their children's karma going back for centuries and centuries under the mistaken belief that that child will have to continue living and paying for the karmic debts of centuries back. Now it is true that we wear modern clothes today, but we are paying karmic debts of many accumulated centuries, each of us individually and collectively. But, and that's the point of the true Christian teaching, And that's the importance of the Christian teaching in all religions. It teaches and demonstrates that your karmic debts are totally nullified now, this minute, when you locate the divine center of your being and live there. Then your ignorance of all of the law that you have been breaking is of no consequence anymore, because at that point where you touch your divine center, the Father within, he liveth your life. And he is not ignorant of the divine will. Now, someone gets headaches, and someone else gets earaches, and someone else gets eye aches, and someone else has this wrong and that wrong. And there's always that big question, why? Why me? We are living in a universe of thought. And the thought that you entertain, the beliefs that you entertain in your thought, the things and persons that you give power in your thought, these represent the manner in which you build up your tomorrows, full of debts that must be paid. This very day, we are building our tomorrows. And when we came into human birth, we inherited our complete past. Never think that you have given your children their karma. They have their own. They have inherited their complete past just as you have inherited yours. You can never give your karma to someone else. The law of inheritance is not true. The only karma you work out is your own. And the only karma anyone else works out is their own. It is a completely individual experience. You cannot borrow. You cannot influence. You can in no way exchange karma with anyone. They cannot receive it from you through heredity, nor could you from your parents. Your experience, your debts, your permanent record of the degree to which you have strayed from the one consciousness, the one self, must be worked out and by you alone. And so we are faced with this, that we have a total responsibility for every word, every deed, every idea, every belief, every thought. And the will of the Father in us will be done. Now, punishment then does not come from God. It is the direct effect of our straying from truth. And the only way we can nullify it is to return to truth. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free of your karma. I have overcome the world, meaning I have overcome all of my past incarnations and the karma that I have built up in this world. Once we start to look at our experience with this word, it throws a rather interesting light on the degree of ignorance which we have manifested and for which we have paid and are paying. Now, to start sending out good karma, there must be an alertness, a willingness to throw away your past. There must be a willingness to know that what I have done in the past is done. I am no longer responsible for that past if I can go within and enter into a state of oneness with my source. In this state of oneness, I will be nourished from within. I will live in the house of the Father, and I will be not in time or space. The I, which has overcome the karma of this world, is ever functioning at the center of my being, and it will now reveal the divine pattern of my life, canceling out all of my sins of omission and commission of the past. Now, if I were to fear God in that instant, I would be departing from the consciousness of God, because I couldn't fear God if I were living in the consciousness of God. If I am to believe in a lack or a limitation, in that instant I know I have left the consciousness of God, and now once more I'm building my debts. Now you must come then to a very high pinnacle of consciousness, where you are standing in a light, aware of the complete total presence where you are of every divine quality, acknowledging each divine quality as present where you are, and knowing that in the kingdom of God there is no karma, because there are no opposites to be entertained in consciousness. This is the altitude from which we must work to break karma. For instance, you would stand at this moment in Vietnam watching the shells burst, watching your friends around you in a state of fear or shell shock, or retreat, or pain. And you, if you too entered into this hysteria, whether or not you came home alive, someday, in another lifetime, you would pay for the fact that at that moment you did not find your safety, your strength, your security in the presence of God where you stood. If when you read tomorrow morning's newspaper, you unconsciously let yourself feel that those in Biafra are starving, even though you see pictures of their little distended stomachs, if you let yourself feel that the crime wave is on the upswing and something else is on the downswing, no matter how your heart beats for these people, you are building your karma, and it isn't good. Now, in this kind of a teaching, then, you are not to repeat the errors of the world, or the inability of the world to live in the Father's house. It is a coming forth and being separate. And when Paul said that, he too was teaching us how to cancel out the karma of our many incarnations. To pray in secret was to teach us that we have to find the secret place of the Most High. We have to find this inner communion. And when Jesus said, I of mine own self can do nothing, he was teaching us that the high point, when karma is completely broken and out of your life forever, is when you have reached that altitude of consciousness where you know that God is the only activity in the universe. No other activity exists. Then you're in a total oneness, and the shadow of karma is forever gone. I of mine own self can do nothing is the realization that God is present, active, fulfilling itself, and all is well, in spite of every appearance in the universe to the contrary. Otherwise, karma. Now there's a word then you've got to take and work with. We don't start out with it very big. We start out on a mundane level. Look around, find out who you think is unfriendly to you, and for every evil they give to you, give them a good in exchange. Why? Because you are recognizing the law of divinity which says, there stands the invisible Christ. And you are not sowing to the visible appearance. Now, sowing to the flesh is not so simple that we can say that this man is a sex pervert, he's sowing to the flesh, and that's about what it covers. No, you can be taking LSD and sowing to the flesh. You can be an alcoholic and sowing to the flesh. Or you can be laying up treasures on this earth which moth and rust will corrupt. And that's sowing to the flesh. You can be hoarding today's manna. You can be spending your life trying to receive without giving. And that is sowing to the flesh. Sowing to the flesh is sowing to all that which is not spirit. Sowing to this world is sowing to the flesh. The nature of your conversation is sowing to the flesh, if that conversation is about this world. And it would seem almost impossible then to live in this world without sowing to the flesh. And it is. It is almost impossible to live in this world without sowing to the flesh. And so we have an impossible task to perform. And when you realize its impossibility, you will realize that you cannot perform it. And that's precisely why it is an impossible task, to make you come to the conclusion that I cannot do it, so Father, you do it for me. I cannot love this neighbor, said Joel. But Father, will you love him for me? I simply can't do it. And therefore, we have to go above the human mind, which cannot do it. And that's why when you look out and see things that you cannot overcome, your next step must be, but the Father within, he doeth the works, not I. And because you have been alerted to the fact that unless you sow to the Spirit and stop sowing to this world, your karmic debt of good and evil must continue, there comes that final moment of transcending your own human selfhood. In order to wipe out your karmic debt, in order to sow to the Spirit. and you're lifted above your human self. Ah, but that's the rebirth. To overcome the world, you must overcome your own human self first. Now, how can we do this if to us God is still someone we fear, or someone we seek a reward from, or someone who we think might punish us in some way if we did something wrong? Do you see, only a human mind can feel that fear, that sense of possible punishment. In fact, the moment we fear God, we have lost God. Now, as we rest in the presence of God within, we have come to that place where there is an inner knower who knows all that is in the spiritual universe. And if we are not in that spiritual universe, we are separated from that inner knower. And this is the only punishment we will ever find: the punishment of separation, of apartness, in which spirit cannot flow in us. Now, you will find that your consciousness is your experience. You cannot go further than your consciousness. And if you are conscious not of the spiritual reality, then your consciousness is your karma, and not God. Your consciousness punishes you. Go and sin no more. Why? That was the revelation, that God doesn't punish you, your sin punishes you. The degree to which you are not sowing to the Spirit is your sin. And that's the only sin. And when you're sowing to the Spirit, you're sinning no more. Now, these are all little pieces. This isn't a great, grandiose, sweeping way of life at this point. It's all the little pieces that have to be done correctly. The neighbor down the street, the associates in the office, the beggar on the corner, the man crawling out of a pub down the street. You must see through all this to the divine image. You must always be in a state of grace, where you can look out at the material world and recognize the non-power of all that you see, and the power of the invisible, which is ever present. Now we're living in the infinite invisible of our own being, in the I. And this I will take you above all those who, through Buddhism and Hinduism, there are billions, millions now, and there have been billions, who are committed into the prison of belief that karma is their permanent dispensation on this earth. And we, unless we break this karma, we are under their karma as well as our own, to the degree that the collective karma of the universe is the universal mind. The universal mortal mind is the cause of the collective karma of the universe. When you break it for yourself, you break it for 10, 20, 30, 500 more. You leaven the consciousness of the universe. Now, if there were a cosmic bookkeeper keeping a perfect, continuous record of your life, you would see so many entries on the liability side that you would think you have to live another 500 human lives before you could ever break even. Because every human breath is another liability. We have not been aware of the staggering impact which world thought plays upon us. We are ever responding to world thought. And world thought is the Antichrist. World thought is the biggest and only builder of karma that there is. Your independence of world thought removes you from this increasing liability. And so you'll find in the same Sermon on the Mount, where we're told to turn the other cheek and walk twain, and be hid in our closet, and pray for our enemies who despitefully use us, we're also taught to break the karma of this world. Take no thought. The thought you take is the Antichrist. The no thought you do not take is the release from the Antichrist. You break the pyramid of Antichrist human thought, which keeps entering liabilities for you in this cosmic bookkeeping book, in this cosmic ledger, making you forever a slave to laws you are breaking unaware. It's important to see the vast, staggering impact of what has been happening to us while we blithely have been saying, I believe in God. God is good. God is love. In our total ignorance, while desiring to worship God, we have turned away from God. While desiring to worship God, we have walked right by God, not recognizing God. And in our desire to fulfill ourselves, we have failed to find out even who we were. Now take a moment and put the brain to rest, and take this human eye, which has already traveled far beyond this point in anticipation, and of the mind which is moving out right now somewhere 500 light years from here in anticipation, and bring that eye back, bring that mind back. Bring everything back to one little point of, called the center, a little point of rest, where you're not anticipating a single thing. You're not anticipating the next moment or the next hour. Your memory isn't sliding back into yesterday. And your anticipation is not sliding back into the future. You're not concerned about anything happening anywhere in this world, whether it's here or there. You're recognizing that all that exists at this moment is the essence of God, and you're at peace. That's all there is anywhere in this universe, the essence of God. as you stay there for 10 seconds, you become white as snow. For you are abiding in the Father. Now to take that with you wherever you go and never lose it. Whatever you do, wherever you are, whatever you are saying, to hold that center of rest is to abide in the Father, and then to behold through that center of rest the law of infinity, guiding your every activity so that the law of karma has no place to act. You're not in action, so you're not in reaction. You're not sowing to the flesh, so you're not going to reap corruption. You're sowing to the spirit by the simple act of holding to that point of rest within you. And practice is what does it. Then everything that Buddhism ever taught and Hinduism ever taught, everything, every act of commission, of omission and commission, every degree to which you have ever, in the last 5 million years, inadvertently walked as an individual instead of as the divine self, this is readjusted in those 10 seconds, and you start fresh, new, white as snow. Karma is broken that instantly. I of mine own self can do nothing. This divine rest, this center, through which God alone functions, destroys karma, destroys all my debts. My Father forgives all my debts, all my trespasses. The prodigal is no longer a prodigal. Now, if we're to escape from the parenthesis into eternity, we have to destroy the law of karma in our experience, because that alone is what is maintaining us in the parenthesis. It drags us back every time we depart. And sometimes it kicks us out of here a little sooner than we want to go. And sometimes it brings back a deformed baby. Sometimes it strikes a man and cripples him. Sometimes it makes you deaf or dumb or blind. Why? You know the answer. It isn't something you did. It isn't some evil you committed. It's the distance between spirit and the flesh. It's the distance between material consciousness and spiritual consciousness. And as your spiritual consciousness increases, as you become more conscious of the spirit, and thus less conscious of the material appearances, the book is being rewritten just as invisibly as it was written. That bookkeeper keeps working. And ultimately, you pay off a debt, and the problem that you have here now disappears. Oh, there's a quicker way. There's a quicker way. The quicker way is not to work at this on a 10% basis. You can give it so much time and say, well, 10% ought to be right. And later on, as Joel says, 20%. Someday, 50%. And you're beginning to say, well, how can I do it? I have obligations. Well, how about fulfilling those obligations and doing this 100%? Because praying without ceasing is 100%. And while you are doing this 100%, you're still in the world, and you're still doing things in the world. But through the 10, 20, 30, 50%, you've learned how to maintain the inner rest while you maintain the outer activity. And then you're working while you are in the spirit. And an 8-hour day doesn't take 8 hours anymore. You find spirit is working in your sleep, in your experience. If necessary, it'll wake you up at 3 a.m. and say, get down to the drawing board. Here's that idea you've been looking for. I picked it up for you because you're ready for it. There it is. Well, here's that composition that you couldn't quite make while you were struggling and striving through a human brain. Here's that invention. Or here's the way to handle this present situation. Yes, once you find that, as you hold this point of rest wherever you are, your outer activities in the world are braced, then you realize that it isn't a question of sacrificing your outer world activities in order to do more of the inner spiritual work at all. No, they go hand in hand. The spiritual functions in such a way that the struggle and labor of the outer world activity is lessened. It's not a substitute. It's a complement. Now we are given this infinite way, and the alternate to it is the karmic way, the way of superstition, of imprisonment, of a limited finite mentality. And every time you see somebody who says, oh, I'm sowing to the spirit, take a second look and be sure that they're not doing it externally. Because you cannot sow to the spirit externally. Never can you sow to the spirit except within your consciousness. That's where it's done. Now, when you're not sowing within, you're sowing without. When you're not thinking truth, what are you thinking? You can't think of two things at the same time. When you're not thinking in terms of truth, you're not thinking spiritually at all. And so you have to look at the world of matter and think about it spiritually. You have to see the invisible dimension that the eye doesn't see. And then you're sowing to the spirit, not the flesh. And as you train yourself to do this, you will be feeling that invisible dimension behind the material object, and that invisible dimension will enable you to understand the material object. How does an artist see new beauty? Because he sees beyond the mere three-dimensional form. He sees into the soul of what he's working with. And when you work in your professions, when you're seeing the additional dimension that is invisible, you're seeing through the material substance to its soul and its soul in you. will enable you to see that in a new relationship. And so you see, even in your human thought, you begin to spiritualize it, you might say, and look into the depth of things, but not out there. You don't look at an object and try to see the soul of it. You look from your own soul at the object. For your soul is the soul of the object. You're really looking from within that object at its outer self. You look at the soul of you, which is within that object as its soul. For the one soul of the universe is your soul. When you find it and touch it and live in it, in this point of rest, it is within everything else that you're looking at. When you see the eye of your neighbor, you're seeing the eye of yourself. And that's why hidden in Jesus' teaching is the one self idea. Always to remind you that whenever you do not see the one invisible self, you're violating divine law. To the murderer, a pardon instantly. To the thief on the cross, a pardon instantly. To everyone on the face of the globe, a pardon instantly, a total state of forgiveness, because you must acknowledge the one self. And as you acknowledge the one self, then you have forgiven those who despitefully use you, those who persecute you in my name. You have opened yourself to the one self. You have recognized yourself. He teaches us that in giving, we are not dividing our income with somebody else. If we have a dollar and we give 50 cents, we're not dividing. If we recognize the one self, we are multiplying. Now you find it hard to think you're giving that to yourself unless you have already sat down with that problem and asked for inner guidance to explain it to you. The law of the one self means that you are omnipresent. There is no place where you are not. You're the soldier fighting our army in Vietnam, as well as our army in Vietnam. Because the one self is all there is. And that is why you pray for your enemies. Your enemy is as much yourself as your friend. Your father and your mother are yourself. Your children are yourself. And this is the law of God. And whenever you violate it by condemning another, the reason it comes back to you as a karmic debt is because you have condemned yourself. When you in any way fear another, you are fearing yourself. When you despise another, it is yourself you despise. The judgment you mete out to others is measured unto you, because there is only one self. And maybe you don't see it on this level, but go up a dimension and you will see the one invisible essence, which through the glass darkly of human vision becomes the many, the multitudes, that appear to be starving in this dimension, but are the one self in the infinite dimension of reality. The mind will just go so far and say, I can't go any further. That's fine. Put that mind to rest. Give it a Sabbath. And let the one self within you and all over this universe, let it communicate itself as you live in that secret place of the Most High.